this heaven?
No. It's Iowa.
I've got an amazing idea for a phone.
Yeah?
Well, yeah.
Pitch it.
What is it?
You got a...
Hi, my name is Ben, and I work on an exciting industry of installing products and creating modems. We are one of the leading manufacturers of modems.
Exactly. A phone with real buttons.
Like, what do you mean? What do you mean real buttons? What is that? I don't understand.
Just like on your...
Like, I can talk to it, and then it'll respond? What do you mean by buttons? I don't get it.
Now, envision the keyboard that's on your computer. Make it smaller and put it on your phone.
No. Does it have podcasts on it?
Yes.
I don't understand. I just pressed my computer screen. It's touchscreen. I don't know what you mean by keyboard.
Nobody wants a keyboard.
Screen, phone, keyboard. You get a satisfying click every time you press a button.
Guys, I'm from St. Paul, where the vampires hang out.
We're talking BlackBerry on the Pod of Dreams.
Yeah, what can I do for you?
Okay, picture a cell phone and an email machine all in one thing. There is a free wireless internet signal all across North America, and nobody has figured out how to use it. It's like the Force. Sorry, have you seen Star Wars?
No.
That guy is sketchy. I don't think he's sketchy. The guy's a shark.
I know how to market it, and I know who we can sell it to. But I want 50% of the company, and I've got to be CEO.
I don't know who you think you are, but
deal.
Are you joking?
We are in a race to get this thing to market, and we are a year behind. I need a prototype.
I'll do it perfectly, or I don't do it.
Mike, are you familiar with the saying, perfect is the enemy of good?
Well, good enough is the enemy of humanity.
What do you call it?
It's called a BlackBerry.
Huh. Try typing with your thumbs.
Get this baby in the hands of every Fortune 500 executive you can find.
We call them crackberries.
Is Doug, come with us, sir.
No. You want to be great, you need to sacrifice. And the more painful the sacrifice, the greater you'll be.
If we put more phones on these networks, they're going to crash.
Is this legal?
You need to sell a million BlackBerries. We are calling it a spy phone.
We're in the middle of a hostile takeover!
Do you know what the sentence is for multi-million dollar stock fraud?
What are you doing?
I'm doing it all.
You guys have no idea how to run a company.
What's happening, man?
I created this entire market.
You said they were the best engineers in the world.
I said they're the best engineers in Canada.
What are they paying you?
I shouldn't say.
They're paying me $10 million.
Yeah, me too.
That's right. Today is my movie pick. And it's one that caught me off guard. I'd seen some promos for it. And I knew Dennis from Always Sunny was in it. And he was bald and looked really strange. But...
Do bald people look strange to you? Mr. Full Head of Hair?
Offensive.
It's offensive. No, you're just going to start the podcast being offensive.
He's not rocking being bald. That's the thing that's weird. He keeps the hair right here. So then he just has the like streak of hair down the middle. And that to me looks way worse. Like just embrace being bald. Get rid of this. That is, what is that for?
It's the Larry David or the George Costanza.
It's a choice, I guess. I don't get it, but it's a choice. Kind of makes you look like a goof, I think.
Do you got a suit?
I do have a suit, but it's not a very nice one.
Do you wear a headband when you wear your suit?
No, I wear a lot of like movie tees and stuff, though. You know, celebrating nerd culture.
Sorry, we interrupted your train of thought, Kevin. Proceed.
With
the pitch. Proceed with the pitch meeting.
Yes. saw a little bit about it, filed that away, and once I saw that it was on Hulu, I was pretty excited and had to watch it right away. And it was well worth the watch. It's kind of like Social Network a little bit, except with a bunch of goofier people.
Yeah, it's way funnier than Social Network. We'll start there. I don't think I hardly laughed at all with Social Network. This is one of the funniest movies I've seen in a long time. It's very fun.
Yes. It's humor. Ahead. It had made something that was kind of dorky, kind of interesting and cool. And it was just fascinating how they kind of worked the system and got to where they are and then pissed it all away.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's so I knew virtually nothing about this movie. I mean, when you said Blackberry last week, I honestly thought of the fruit. I was didn't have a clue.
Well, so did they. I didn't know that's where it came from. When I saw that scene, I was like, oh shit, that's why it's called a blackberry, huh?
Yeah, I guess. I know there's a line in the movie where they talk about it becoming the phone people had before they had an iPhone. And it was like, yeah, that's where BlackBerry was in the recesses of my mind. I was like, oh yeah, that used to be the phone. I had one. I'd forgotten about it almost completely.
I definitely wanted to cover that. Did you guys both have BlackBerries at some point?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, 2008, 2009, whenever it was, something like that, probably right around.
Mm-hmm.
Right before.
I think I had the BlackBerry Bold in this movie. Not the one that had the glitch because it was made in China. The one before that. I'm pretty sure that's the one I had with the trackpad.
Oh, yeah, the trackpad. Ooh. Yeah.
How exciting was the trackpad for you? Was you like, this
it
is
was
the best?
It was stupid. Because I got it when the iPhone 1 was already out, I think.
Yeah, I think they were together based on the movie. Like they came out around the same
so
time.
I got it instead of the iPhone because it was way cheaper. And I was like, this is stupid. This is a little stupid. Like, I want a screen. Why do I want these stupid clicky buttons? This is dumb. Everybody had a cool iPhone, and I had this little stupid tiny – and the tiny buttons, they were so small, too. My fingers could – you needed, like, a tweezers to fucking press them.
Yeah, I remember the little ball that you – I mean, like, when it brought back memories right when he makes the prototype. At the end of, like, Act 1 when they're with whatever it's AT&T or whatever, like, Verizon, whichever phone company it is.
With the Game Boy?
Yeah, it's the Game Boy, and there's just a little – I was like, oh, yeah. I used to be just a little sphere.
So you rolled your emails. Yeah.
Yeah. And at some point, yeah, I remember mine got like junk in it and wouldn't scroll as well. Like the just dust or just dirt, whatever, would just come in and then it wouldn't scroll nicely anymore. So it triggered a lot of those memories. Not that that's necessarily the point, but no, this was a story I I would have said beforehand if you pitched this to me, I said, I don't really need to know about the BlackBerry. I don't care. The rise and fall of BlackBerry, but watching it was like, wow, I am surprisingly invested in these characters and this situation. This is genuinely really, really interesting. It's funny and engaging. It was very surprising to me. It hooked me like almost instantly. I don't want to talk about the beginning scene. Well, first we get this thing about telecommunications, some old guy from the 50s or 60s or whatever talking about how telecommunications is going to change. But then we see Jay Baruchel and his character's name is Mike. Mike is the guy who was co-CEO.
Yeah.
Ball Silly on the other side. And
Ballsley.
Yeah.
Ballsley.
And they're getting ready. Mike's getting ready to give a pitch to him. And he hears the buzzing sound and for like the telecom. And That was the moment I got completely sold when he's sitting there trying to fix it and then the other guy Doug.
It's like that's somebody's thing. You can't
like, that's somebody's dude's thing. Fucking thing. That's the guy's thing. Fucking thing. And you hear the anxiety in his voice and you relate to it because I'd be the same thing. And then he sees Dennis come over. It's like there's a bald angry guy walking this way and he sees him yell and it's like, oh man.
Yeah, he almost gets the coffee spilled on him. He's like, watch where you're fucking going. Where I was like, oh, so this is just gonna be unhinged Dennis the whole movie too, which. I'm all in for.
Yeah, it kind of was. I was like, all right, man, I am invested. And I actually had to stop at that point because I knew Lauren, my wife, would want to watch it. And we did eventually watch it together. It was like, okay, I think she'll be really into this movie. And that point, it was like, just, oh, I'm hooked. Okay. It's a much more game. The biggest comparison I had, and it's a positive one, is Air. Air is a movie about Air Jordans, and that one gets a buy, sort of, but this one was a billion times better, more interesting. And the soundtrack was really, really fun. But it was just that beginning especially was just so sharply written. I mean, the whole thing is incredibly well written, but like the first act to me is like immaculate. I don't know. I couldn't find a single flaw with the way that movie begins through the end of them successfully pitching the new phone to Verizon and or AT&T, whichever one it is.
The Verizon pitch scene was my favorite when he forgets the phone and then
that was so stressful.
Yeah, and then Balls Silly was by himself trying to sell it, and he gets put in his place. And then Mike comes back and just figures out how to sell this idea. That was just you could tell that was just a billion-dollar idea right there.
I had a problem with that scene, though. Is like he just told him how to do it. Why wouldn't they just be like, all right, get the fuck out of here. We'll just do it. We'll just do that then. Like it's like he cracked the code for them and just gave it to him. I'm sure that's not how it actually happened. It's more dramatic this way. But right, they're like, oh, so we just have to have the phones act as the server, and that requests the data, so it's not constantly asking for the email. So yeah, all right, you fixed it for us. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Yeah, well, maybe he had a patent for it.
He did have a patent for it, and I don't think they had the phone infrastructure for cell phones. I don't know if AT&T or Verizon tried to how much they wanted to invest in creating phones.
It just like thematically bugged me. It's like you just told them how to do it, you know.
Well, that's what worked, because he's a problem solver, right? This is the thing we see in the beginning when he wants to fix the buzzing sound.
Right. No,
he's like, here's problems. I like to solve problems, and here's how I can solve this problem. I've thought about it. I'm very smart. And he doesn't even really sell them. He's like, I understand this problem.
But if I was with you, I'd be like, if I was Balsley, I'd be like, shut up. Just tell him we fixed it, and you know, we can show you how to do it. You got to sign a contract with us, and we can show you how to do it. But we're not just going to tell you.
Well, I think it worked out. I don't know. I have no idea how close that pitch meeting was to the actual one, but clearly Verizon didn't want to steal his idea, unlike U.S. Robotics. I think people knew he had a good idea. He was just way too nice, like aggressively, painfully nice. Part of why
he's Canadian.
Born. Yeah. Unlike Dennis, who's an angry Canadian. He's like the extremely rare, aggressive, aggro Canadian.
Love
well,
hockey.
He went to Harvard, so.
Oh, yeah. He's a little uppity. Yeah.
So he's got that East Coast mentality.
So my relationship with this movie, it's Sunny guys have a podcast, or at least they used to. I don't know if they still do it, where they would go back and watch episodes from this first episode on and then talk about it on the podcast.
Sure.
And there was like a break in between the season one and two because Howerton had to leave to film this movie. And then they gave him a bunch of crap because he came back and his head was bald. And they just talked about like there was like a lot of buzz with his performance. And then when the movie came out, he was kind of pitching it, and they were just sort of always talking about it. So I was like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. It's not like a thing. This isn't like a type of movie I would ever go to the movie theater to see. It would be such a waste. Like, this is why streaming exists for me, is movies like this. But yeah, and then so there was a lot of buzz that he actually, I think early on I was like, is he going to get an Oscar nomination for this? Didn't end up working out that way for him. But and then I had planned to see the movie, wasn't going to like rent it or pay for it. And they released it on AMC in a 3-part miniseries. And so I watched that initially. I did actually go back and watch the Hulu, the movie itself. I think the 3-part miniseries actually worked a little better because like the first episode ended with that BlackBerry where it zooms in on his shirt and he's got the stain and like, what's it called? And then it was just like end of episode one. And the movie's kind of in a great sort of, you know, it's like the beginnings, the rise, and then the fall of the company. So it worked really well.
Yeah, that's your clear 3-act break, right? I mean, each section is a different time. So that would work. But I mean, I thought this worked really well as a movie. There's nothing interesting in it. I suspect. So I don't know who Matt Johnson is before this. I know he plays Doug, right? That's him.
And I didn't know that, too, when I first saw it afterwards. I was like, holy shit, that guy was the director, too? Wow.
I was like, I don't know.
And that guy's so much fun. He, like, just what a fun character. Just a total vibe guy.
Oh, sure. Vibe guy. Oh, everything. Like, hey, bad news. We weren't really heard, and nobody wanted to buy the phone. The good news is it's movie night, and we're watching Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Bad dates.
Yeah. No, Matt Johns, I didn't know anything about him, and I was like, this guy directed a really great movie. How has he not done much? And he's done a couple of movies, but nothing major, nothing that's really crossed out of the Canadian film circle, I don't think, in the past. It's like, oh, this is really a clever script, and it's really well directed.
Well, that was the Glenn Howerton when he was talking on the podcast. It was like the reason why he did it. He was like, this Matt Johnson guy is fucking brilliant and like super, super creative and had like a perfect pitch on how to make this movie. So that's why he decided to do it.
I'm glad he did it. It's perfect. The culture class from like the nerds with no structure, and even like the one guy who shows up, he's like, so I didn't get any money yesterday. And my girlfriend thinks that I shouldn't, she agrees that I shouldn't come back here anymore. And it's perfect. And then nobody can handle a ball silly. Everybody is just so intimidated and just cannot process somebody so aggressive.
Give me the CEO of TNT. Like, who are you talking to?
they don't get it. And it's like you could just see them getting like triggered from bullies in high school, almost just like seeing this guy as just incredible, the culture clash. At the same point, you know that at that moment in time, they need an asshole. Like, that's desperately the role that's needed at the company at that time. And everything is going to disintegrate eventually, but it's like you're on board. You're like, yes, they need to be a little bit whipped up into shape. They need somebody to be arguing and aggressive.
Yeah, and they needed someone that would actually market it.
Well, that's the Steve Jobs, right? Wasn't that his role in Apple? He didn't make anything, right? He didn't actually design anything. He was just the business guy, as far as I understand. And then he sort of thought of as this visionary, but he really wasn't. Because there's that Jobs movie. Is it Wozniak? Was he the guy that really did all the actual construction and building? He was the Mike of the Apple duo.
Remember the? Yeah, well, at least you're talking about the one with Seth.
Yeah.
There we go.
And, see, Seth Rogen basically was the guy that actually did the
The
work of it, the bulk of it. Jobs just was, he was the face of it.
And understood market trends and kind of he did have a vision, I think, of where things were going to go and what people would want.
Well, so did Balsillie, right? He was like, he's like, these guys are going to put internet on a phone. They're going to put email on a phone. This is going to change the world. You know, he's the one that saw that.
Well, yeah, he doesn't really buy in. He doesn't have any better options, but then he really buys in when he talks to the US robotics guy. The guy's like, hey, we'll buy the modems if you throw in the patent for the phone. And then he's like, oh shit. Then he's like, this is a big deal. This guy actually has something here. All right, we're done. We're done with modems. We are going to be working on this phone. That's the way forward. He's got enough instincts there. There's something that happens in the movie that I think this is a choice by Matt Johnson. It's like the first act is so fun and so funny, and it's just a good time. And I think as we go further to the movie, it gets less and less fun. I think that's an intentional choice. It's interesting. Like, it gets just like this more serious as they scale up, as they get bigger, they lose that plucky underdog mentality. We see them slowly like transform into this.
Well, greed, right? It's all about greed.
We're in competition at a macro level, and they get bloated and overstuffed and overly structured. And it just becomes more bureaucratic and authoritarian, I guess, is kind of what happens.
Yeah, Balsillie tries to buy an NHL team. He gets distracted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, the one thing that struck me the most about this movie is really how, and I think I'd mentioned this last week, how recently all of this happened. You watch this movie, you're like, oh, it's like, actual Social Network's like a lot like that too, but like you watch, it's like, oh, this is like ancient history, right? This is like the 90s or 80s. Like, no, it was 2007, I think, when BlackBerry ended up losing its market share, and that's when the movie ends, I think it's 2007. So it's like less than 20 years ago that this company completely crumbled and fell apart from being, you know, in the early 2000s, the number one, you know, had over 50% of the market share and over 20% of the world, which is just mind blowing to think about. In that short amount of time, just a few years, it disappears. like off the face of the planet, that that's how quickly this stuff changes.
Well, it does change quickly. I mean, like the second you're behind the market, you're done. So this is what's fast. What was BlackBerry doing in 2011? Were they still trying to copy iPhones at that point? Does anybody remember? Yep.
They did release I remember the screenless or the buttonless screen, and it did make a click when you pressed it. They released a few different phones after that.
Yeah, Obama used one throughout his presidency.
They did. They did market this really? The security, right? They were like, our emails are more secure. They're encrypted. Yeah. You know, that was the real selling point. And they had a lot of corporate contracts where you'd have to have a BlackBerry.
See, that was one of those interesting little subtleties that he made it so well that that people cannot get into BlackBerries. Like, it's encrypted. You can't hack them. They are self-contained, which is fascinating. Ultimately, people don't care about that. They're like, oh, you're going to use my data.
Well, and there was a little snippet in there where the one tech guy was like, Apple's releasing this store where anybody can build an app and you can get, you know, with the App Store. And I was like, that was this crazy idea. But I think that hurt BlackBerry, too, because you couldn't it was only BlackBerry shit. You know, you couldn't get third party apps on there. It was just their stuff.
Well, yeah, they didn't get the switch was to data. Right. They were just too late on the They need – we're selling data. They're going to switch to selling. That's where the market's going to go, which that's already gone too. I mean, you get unlimited use. It's just like – it brought back a lot of weird, like, old thoughts. Like, oh, yeah, you used to get, like, 2 gigs of data a month or whatever it was. Yeah. Like
when they cracked the free text message thing, it was like, oh, wow, I remember where you could only send a certain number of text messages, and you had to fucking pay for that.
Where you had to pay, 15 cents a text or 10 cents a text. Like, oh, yeah. Wow. That does feel like a bazillion years ago. It's not, but it feels that way. In terms of like technological innovations,
But this movie's in that you had mentioned Social Network. There was that show Silicon Valley. It's a lot like that. The show Halt and Catch Fire, which was like a fictional version of, you know, this tech company. I mean, it's the whole genre of. But for me, it's always entertaining. Like I'm always down to watch if a tech company create and build something, and then I mean, it's just like the true innovation. But it does, like, what does this movie ultimately say about anything? Really, is it just greed kills or ambition kills? I don't know. I mean, that's where I'm sort of like, I like the movie. It's fun and enjoyable, and Glenn Howerton's great, and the How to Train Your Dragon guy's good, and Doug's awesome. But like, other than just the fun of them building this thing and watching a sort of a company grow from nothing, what does it really say about anything?
Looking at you, Kevin, to take a crack at this. Otherwise, I can't. But
easy come, easy go. That's how it worked out for them.
I mean, was there ever like a path where they kept their share? And then, do I even care if they did? You know what I mean? Like, I think maybe that's part of it. Is you see how they Mike became an asshole and didn't really care about that. Once he cut Doug loose, once he lost his vibes guy, everything fell apart, you know, he cut his friends out. I don't know. The Social Network's the same thing. Like that movie's fun when they build the app but then it does lead to like, oh, he's like destroying our society. That was one piece that this movie, I think, missed a bit.
Yeah. I guess I viewed it a little differently is in order to compete on this macro level, you have to become what you hate. I mean, he clearly said he didn't want to, you know, early on, he doesn't like stuff made in China. It's shit. That's his thing at the beginning, right, with the intercoms.
That's not why they lost their share, because they had phones built in China. Is that, you think that's what the movie's trying to say?
Well, as far as I don't know about I'm just talking about the movie only. I have no idea what the reality of what happened with BlackBerry. That's, I think, clearly what the movie implies, right? Like, their total crash is that they said they made a phone where literally every single one was returned because it was made in China and it was shitty.
Yeah, but
at the end, he's literally back to where he started.
No, I know.
Trying to manually fix shitty Chinese manufactured stuff.
It's the synergy of the movie. But there was the marketing guy before any of that who's like, he shows him the chart. He's like, in 2 years, we're nothing. We have zero share. And that was before they even did the China deal.
Right, but he also starts to believe his own hype and becomes this bloated monster who cannot see the market anymore and thinks it can't possibly change. So like he's at the pitch meeting with Verizon at the end, and he's just totally bumbling his way through it. He just cannot fathom that the market has already shifted under his feet. And he's under the belief that people love his phone, and he thinks it's so great, and that's why people work for him, is they think the phones are so great, which is delusional nonsense. And he becomes so enamored and so gigantic that he just can't see what's going on, and becomes this gigantic thing that he hated. He becomes an asshole by the end, right? He transforms into ball silly, basically, at the very, very end, yelling at people and not caring and telling people fun's over and has no problem cutting out everybody. In order to compete at that level, you have to become like that. You have to make all these compromise choices in order to compete at the big level. I don't know. That seemed to me the thing is, you know, they got too big for their britches. If they had, the way forward would have been, first of all, the real win would have been just, hey, let Palm Pilot buy you and you make a bunch of money and then you can just do whatever, do a new thing with your own money if you want. Or just don't scale endlessly. Stay small. I mean, they had to grow to avoid the hostile takeover. That's the one thing that forced them to grow. But if they just said, hey, we're going to make really high quality phones that are secure and always work, they could have stayed as a market force for a long time. I mean, they wouldn't have been the leader anymore. But to be a leader, you have to constantly, I mean, how many different iPhones do we have now? Are we on 15, 16, 17? What number iPhone are we on?
15.
Like, okay.
Yeah, something like that.
So we get a new iPhone every year. I don't know how much they change really year to year. Cameras get better, I guess. I don't know. You have to just constantly be forcing people to go to the new thing and creating more trends. And it's, I don't know. The synergy of the movie, I don't know. It worked for me that he found himself doing back what he was doing at the very beginning of the movie. And he became the monster by the end.
Chocolatey. Yeah, I was just looking up the Doug guy, Doug Freegan. So in real life, apparently he did sell all of his stock around the same time as the first iPhone was released. And in 2007, he resigned from his position, and he was estimated to have $1.3 billion in net worth, and that was in 2007. So I don't have an updated amount. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like that's pretty true to life, that he sold out right at the right time and just...
Yeah, the high. And
yeah.
Just living the dream life as a billionaire. I don't know.
Good for Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having movie nights every night, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, he did, though. I mean, the kind of the shitty thing of that is, like, what did he actually do? We didn't really see him do anything but fuck around all the time and play video games.
Well, his point is fucking around kept the employees happy. I mean, they positioned the company as like a nerd club, right? And in 96, nerds hadn't taken over the world yet. Nerd culture was still relatively niche compared to like mainstream. And it made all these like nerds happy to work long hours. They're just hanging out with their buddies, talking about movies and playing video games. So yeah, they're happy about
doing podcasts and stuff.
I mean, I love the Doom shirt. I love the Doom shirt. Like early on, I was like, oh, this guy's wearing a Doom shirt. 96. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Do you think this just sort of struck me? Do you think the rise in wealth from these like extremely dorky people from, you know, the Microsofts to the like George Lucas, right? All these just fucking super dorks becoming the wealthiest people on the planet. Do you think that's what shifted some of this nerd culture being? Because I mean, really, like comics and video games are sort of the center of culture now. You think any of the explosion of wealth by the Zuckerbergs of the world changed that?
Maybe. I think it has to do with our generation being like weaned on them, and we still keep loving them, and they just kept pumping them out and they kept getting better and better. And so there was this built-in market. I mean, I don't know. If like Iron Man had come out in 1994, I think it would have been a hit, but people, I don't know, just had their views that it wouldn't, and it kind of movie wouldn't have gotten taken seriously at that point by producers. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's just that like these nerds got a bunch of money, so then they started producing the movies. And this is like, you know, Marvel Studios at the time and then Disney producing all this MCU stuff. I don't know. I just think there was this built-in untapped market that people assumed was niche, and it just kept growing in the 90s and 2000s. And then it tapped in. It's like, you know, people were just ready to go for it. I don't know. What do you think, Kevin?
I think that, we grew up and we still had the same tastes. And I think it did help that they finally figured out how to make superhero movies. And video games keep getting better and better.
I did love, were they playing StarCraft? Like a LAN StarCraft battle? When he puts the plunger on the monitor? I think it was StarCraft. Like, I fucking did that. I did a ton of those LAN parties where you each had your own computer, you plug them in together. You're not even on the internet, right? You're just connecting your screens together, your PCs.
Yeah, did that in the dorms.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I mean, it's like on the theme, at one point they're watching, I don't know, it's like, they're watching Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is the movie where the Nazis try to get the Ark and they all get their faces melted. And then they're watching They Live at one point.
They Live, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a movie about, you know, evil aliens exploiting markets. I mean, I just think there's something there about, yeah, greed, endless consumption, how capitalism is dehumanizing. I don't know. I think there's something there.
Because these guys they're not heroes. You know what I mean?
Not by the end of the movie. Like, in the end of the movie, you see him, it's like, it's that line from The Dark Knight, you either die a hero, live long enough to become a villain. At some point, he becomes a villain. Like, he's a hero.
I guess Christopher Nolan hated that line. He's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Now he's like, it's true. But now he said, it actually makes a ton of sense. I didn't write it, but I get it now. Like, at some point, you're going to get so big that you're going to be having people in other countries having to manufacture these parts for almost no money in a shitty factory. You're going to have to mine for, I mean, like, that's the logical conclusion, right? I mean, Mike wanted to keep everything in Canada and have everybody make it and have it be high quality. And quality takes time. It becomes more expanding. He just has to just keep making these choices to compete. He becomes what he hates. I don't know. I think that's, to me, he died a villain, career-wise, company-wise. They stopped being a plucky underdog solving a problem, and they became something else. Side note, can we talk about Michael Ironside?
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
I was so excited to see him. All I was going to say is I was like, oh, my God, I've not seen Michael Ironside in a movie in a long time. Oh, my God, I've got a nice Michael Ironside chew out in this movie. And it was one of the few funny moments towards the end of the movie, towards the end of the second act, when he's like, you guys are children. You're all children playing with your little tiny penises. And then zooms in on a woman who's like just sitting there like, no. False.
I mean, I like the guy that they hired with the fake stock option scheme, and he's like, that guy will fuck you up. Like, why is that guy here? He was like terrified.
Oh, he was terrified. Just like, oh man, I was like, man, I forgot what it's like, how scary Michael Ironside could be, even though he's like bigger, older. It's like, man, oh.
What's your favorite Ironside?
Probably Total Recall, I guess.
I was gonna say Total Recall. Oh, it's gotta be Total Recall. Is he in, was it Starship Troopers? Is he in that, or is that?
Yeah, he's in Starship Troopers.
Okay, yeah.
He's the colonel or whatever his title is.
Yeah.
Leads the troops fighting the bugs. Part of the problem with that movie is Michael Ironside's so cool that, like, if you're trying to do a satire of fascism, it's tough because you make them look really heroic, and I don't know. It's different movie. I don't know. This is... I don't think I'm as enamored with, like, the tech rise and fall movies as you are, Eric. Like, it's not an instant win. I mean, the ones I've seen have been well made on the whole, but I'm not instantly like, ooh, I care about, like, if they do one for Elon Musk someday, I'm not going to be automatically on board. The Jobs one, I was just kind of like, I mean, I don't care. Sure, it transforms stuff, but this one I genuinely was invested in. I like, because they also crater so bad. Certainly when in the end they win, that's less fun to me. The fact that it's just very much this makes it more compelling, and they're just more, is more funny. Everybody is more likable.
Well, that's what makes Social Network, I think, like, a great movie, and this isn't a great movie. Like, from my perspective, I enjoyed this movie, but I think Social Network is like a great, like, all-time great movie, because it does sort of portend to the destruction of our society and as humans, and that's what I was saying. Like, I don't think this movie touches on how much, you know, it makes a joke about a crackberry, how you're staring at that, not, you know, not communicating with human beings, and like that has led to what I think is like the destruction in our, you know, interpersonal relationships. No, I do. I think there's some truth to that. Like, like, yes, we are able to do our jobs and we can record a podcast remotely and do this kind of stuff. But like, you know, our human face-to-face interaction is like almost completely non-existent anymore in our society. It's only getting worse. And, you know, the internet culture has brought out the worst in people. And this movie doesn't really touch on that at all. It's like, hey, we made a lot of money and we had market share on cell phone. You know, like, who gives a shit? That's my thing. And that's why I don't think it's a great movie.
Because it says, because it implies that Social Network is bad in the end. So that there's a moral lesson to the movie, The Social Network. So which is why
Zuckerberg's the villain of that movie. He's not the hero. And I think that's true. In this movie, these guys are kind of the heroes. We watch them fail.
I don't know. I do. I think there's more of a transformation here that I think feels deliberate.
I mean, they break fucking laws in the SEC. And there's no consequences to them. It says that Lazzaridis guy.
Well, there's no consequences for Mark Zuckerberg. He has to give people money, but he's fine. He's a billionaire. Zuckerberg has no consequences.
We see him as a lonely, miserable person.
Well, isn't that true of Mike as well?
Maybe. There's not a whole lot about his personal life in this movie. We really don't see who he is as a person.
Well, yeah, that would be something that disappointed me a little bit. I wanted to know a little bit more about Ball Silly other than he's a Canadian asshole who wants to eventually buy his own hockey team. That's sort of his personality, and he seems to have no depth beyond that. I don't know. Mike doesn't look happy by the end. He looks pretty miserable and delusional and unhappy and isolated.
Because he lost his money, you know.
But that's a consequence that Zuckerberg doesn't experience. And
yet.
Okay. I mean, I don't think you're wrong about the implications, but I don't know. The Social Network, we see him look scary and ominous, I guess, but he doesn't look as crazy as was Justin Timberlake's the guy who's paranoid about in that movie. Isn't Justin Timberlake in Social Network? Okay.
Yeah. He's Sean Parker, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Napster guy, right?
Yeah. So you're not a big Social Network guy, Kevin. Do you like Social Network?
I loved Social Network when I saw it, but I haven't seen it since the theater.
I haven't seen it since it came out. I liked it. Fine, it's very good. I don't think it sucks, but I also don't know that I agree that it's.
It'd be a great double feature with this, I think.
I don't think it's as harsh on Mark Zuckerberg as you maybe do. In the end, he learns a lesson. Like Rashida Jones comes in, and is like, you're getting sued. Just give him some money. You're gonna be okay. And yeah, he gets annoyed at people who he feels are trying to grift him, and he's kind of a douche, but okay. He becomes a billionaire.
I mean, they probably, I wonder if Lazzaridis and Doug, if they're friends, and, you know, we never see really, we see that Doug left and it says he sold out at the peak, but like, is their friendship over? Do they cease being, because that's one of the best parts about Social Network is you see, Zuckerberg and his buddy Spider-Man,
Garfield,
their relationship falls apart and they're
Relationship falls apart. He tells him to fuck off and that he's useless. And then that's when Doug left and sold all his shares.
Yeah, it's possible they reconciled later. The movie doesn't cover that. The movie makes it look like Mike's isolated, and we see Doug hanging out with people who aren't Mike, like at some nice outdoor place, seeing a screening, probably sipping some beers and having a grand old time. We also see on a side note, Ball Silly looks like he's having a good time fishing with his former boss who fired him. That was one of the weird, like, oh, so I guess he's happy now. He's at peace because he's fishing and can, I don't know. That was the weirdest thing. He was totally unfazed. His arc was a little confusing to me.
Yeah, because how many people lost their jobs, right? It's like, oh, they lost the market share. No, what happened is this company went bankrupt. And all these people that worked for them ended up losing their jobs. It's like, it's a horror story for most of those people.
Well, I know the ones that got paid $10 million, probably they came out okay, I think.
Maybe. But the engineers, all the people that were just there working for Research in Motion, you know?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's one of the things that AIR does well is show you there are stakes to corporate politics and positioning and all that stuff. Like, you know, people will lose their jobs. Even if you don't care about the macro trends. I don't know. This movie is way more fun. The Social Network isn't really fun. You kind of cheer for Zuckerberg a little in the beginning when he's like going into the Yahoo boardroom and telling him to fuck off or whatever in his bathrobe. But he's a jerk pretty consistently. He's not very likable. He's not supposed to be, I don't think, but in the end, yeah, you're just kind of left. Yeah, that's kind of, this seems to be what happened. That seems to be a fairly accurate portrayal of the rise of Facebook. I'm with you, David Fincher. I think that's Fincher, right? It's not Soderbergh. Yeah. Fincher.
No, that's Fincher.
I'm seeing Fincher and Soderbergh and stuff. I liked the transformation of seeing plucky underdog to bloated, awful, failing corporation. Because it just goes this. I think the fun gets zapped out of it. He's no longer solving a problem. He is the problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a whole lot else to say.
Did you have a favorite scene, Eric?
Yeah, I think, like I said, Glenn Howerton just losing his shit, I think, it's some of the best for him. It's Always Sunny. And I didn't love the boardroom scene with the NHL, because it didn't make sense. It was like, why did they fly him out there to just tell him that the deal was off? Like that. But, you know, I'm from Waterloo or the vampire, like that kind of shit always works for me. And him just yelling at the nerds, I always work too. So those are probably my favorite scenes. But I think, like you said, the beginning, that first sort of quarter of the movie or third of the movie where they're building the device and the prototypes and, you know, the stakes there, that's probably my favorite part of the movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was pure fun. Well, I can tell you the part that gave me the best laugh by far. So it was another throwback to the like mid-90s when you had dial-up internet, and if you were on the internet, people couldn't use the phone. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, you couldn't do both at the same time. It was too complicated. And I don't remember. I think Ball Silly is the one that needs to make the call. But he's on the phone. He's like, what the fuck is that? And somebody's like, it's a carrier wave. And Mike's like, seeing some guy with his computer on, he's like, you got to get off the internet. He's like, well, some guy just tried to argue that Yuning Soon is a Q, which is this super esoteric Star Trek fight that he was having online in some message.
I figured
message
it was some Star Trek bullshit.
And I was like, this joke was written just for me. That is, and I cackled, and Lauren's like, you have to explain. I was like, I don't know that I can explain. This is like such an esoteric Star Trek bit of nonsense. It's just nerds arguing about Star Trek online in the 90s, which was a very rare thing then. You could probably find lots of people arguing about Star Trek online now. But
now they do it on Facebook.
Sure. Or Twitter. Probably more likely Twitter, but could be Facebook. That was the scene where I had to pause it and laugh for, I don't know, a good 30 seconds. It was like, oh, that's perfect. And because the nerd says it like as though it's something important, like, do you believe this? This person has this ridiculous Star Trek opinion? Ugh, like it's meaningful. Anyway, that was my favorite. But yes, all the culture clash in the beginning really, really works between the aggressively polite nerds and the, you know, asshole non-tech guy. That was part of the movie. It was just out and out fun and entertaining. What about you, Kevin?
I liked the boardroom scenes. I thought they were all very... So they gave you a lot of backstory, and yet I felt they propelled the movie as well. Because they kind of have to talk about the boring shit about the exposition and stuff about the phones. And I thought those were a really well packaged way of and really efficient way of talking about it.
I did love the Elway's stuff with the Palm Pilot, like when he was kind of dicking around with that about the deal, and he's like, oh yeah, we'll sign a deal. Yeah, it's great. We'll just give us some time to work this out. And he keeps calling him and fucking him around, and he's like, what do we call it, the Palmberry or whatever? Like, oh yeah, that sounds great. And just kind of strung him along until he could sell more phones. I thought that was kind of a cool, because like, same with Palm Pilot, does that company even exist anymore? You know, like, what a weird that there were these two, like one phone you could just write a like a note on it. It was such a, and it wasn't a phone, like you couldn't even send emails. It was such a weird thing that there were these crazy devices that were so unhelpful to, like, you know, you think of all the things your cell phone can do right now, that these devices did none of that shit. And we still bought them like crazy and held on to them. And the fucking Palm Pilot was like the size of a brick.
Did you have a Palm Pilot, Eric?
No, but you'd see.
I had a Palm Pilot.
Oh my God.
It didn't do anything.
You could just write notes on it. It was like having a notepad or something.
I have an electronic notepad, you guys.
Just get a notepad. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like all of these technology things that were... And you will probably say that in 20 years. Like, your phone didn't do whatever? Like, it didn't do AR or virtual reality? Like,
it doesn't shoot lasers? What kind of a piece of shit phone is that?
Didn't have holograms? Like, what are you talking about?
You have to press buttons? You can't just talk to it like a Star Trek communicator?
Neuralink thing is like, you had a phone? You had to actually fucking carry this thing around on your hand? Like,
you guys were losers.
Like, your grandkids are going to be like, okay, grandpa, like...
At some point, the technology will pass me by, and I'll be like, I just don't understand. You know, at some point, most people are like,
couldn't teleport, Grandpa. You couldn't go into the thing and, you know, Star Trek beam your way to another place.
Well, sorry, Grandson. Why do I have to get a laser scanned? I just want to go see your baseball game, Grandpa. Just shut up and put your eye next to the. But I don't. Can I just give no, Granddad. Just stand up and let the laser scan your eyeball. I don't know. So it's just gonna be weird stuff's gonna happen. Yeah, no, that's fine. That's true. It changes really, really fast. Although it feels like, I guess we're still in the smartphone era. I don't know what after the invention of the iPhone. What's the biggest smartphone development you would say? Think of anything. What's the most monumental shift since whatever 2010 or whenever it was? 9? I don't know. 8.
Well, yeah. I mean, because the iPod. iPhone put music on your phone.
Yeah.
And then the camera was, there was digital cameras and that kind of all was combined. Social media is the, big sort of change with all of that.
Yeah, but that's not a phone change necessarily.
Well, you do it on your phone, but yeah.
Okay. I was just trying to think.
I think they would think the virtual reality is, that's what Zuckerberg would say is the next thing. The virtual world, just living in a virtual world completely.
Spending every night on your Oculus Rift, listening to Taylor Swift?
Yeah, betting Taylor Swift.
Oh, got it. Well, we're not there yet, I don't think.
Little Father John Misty quotes for you.
I just need a throwback. But yeah, I don't know. This is a movie, again, I didn't know about, but I'm glad I watched. It was very fun.
Bring back the BlackBerry. Let's bring it back.
We got to restart the company again.
That's fine. Click.
Research in motion. Here we go.
Cool. Well, should do ratings.
Yeah, let's do our ratings.
Kevin, you picked it. What, 10 stars?
I give it 4.5 stars. It's a very solid movie. I think it's immensely enjoyable and entertaining. The performances were all spot on. Even though... Like you were saying, Glenn Howerton, it's kind of a one-note performance, but it was such a good note that it was a standout performance. Jay Baruchel was great. I felt the growth of his character from a meek nerd to giant jerk was really effective. Great acting, great story. Easily gets 4.5 stars for me.
Yo, Tabian, that's what I would give it.
Both of you give it 4.5 stars?
Yeah,
near perfect.
So.
Near perfect.
Did you guys
coordinate these scores? Like, do you get on a separate call and talk about it before we jump on here? Like, what's going on?
No, it's not coordinated. I don't know. It wasn't quite immaculate. It wasn't quite 5 stars. There's some quibbles here and there, but I thought the movie really worked. I mean, it gets less and less fun, but I also think that's what the movie's trying to do. You're now caring less and less about what's happening because Mike is less and less likable as the movie goes on. I don't know. I thought it was really terrific. I don't know. It's probably my favorite tech startup movie. I don't know. Wow. I like it better than The Social Network. Sorry.
I got standards. I would say this is like a solid 3.5 star movie. It's like very fun, very enjoyable. I like it. Doesn't say a whole lot about anything. It doesn't really like affect me in any emotional or just really any way, but I enjoy it. I don't have a lot of bad things to say about it. It's just very solid, fun, entertaining. Is that a comedy? Would you call this a comedy?
I mean, it's a dramedy. Okay. Again, I think it becomes less. I mean, it's like an out and out comedy for the first 40 minutes or whatever it is. It's like real, a straight comedy.
Really great artistry in the intercom buzzing, and then the end he's listening to the thing, sort of like this sort of Twilight Zone-esque kind of like, you know, getting what he deserved, and what tormented him is what he ended up, like, he buried himself in his own grave, you know, kind of thing. I thought there's some good artistry and framing with that, how the movie started and how the movie ended.
The writing's terrific. I don't know if there's a flaw with the writing other than I would want more of the backstory from some of the characters.
But like you mentioned this scene, there's a couple scenes where the camera does like a lot of work, which I love that in movies, like,
sure,
particularly the BlackBerry where it's on his shirt, like he's talking and he's like making a speech and the camera sort of slowly pans down to a little stain on his shirt and it kind of pulls in and then he's like, what's it going to be called? Nobody says BlackBerry, but it's just like looking at his stain and then cuts the scene. I think that's some good filmmaking. And then, like you said, the joke about playing with your little penises, and it just sort of focuses on this woman, and she's like, what the fuck are you talking? Like, that's funny, just like camera work, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff is pretty well done.
Yeah, good directing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's very well directed. Yeah.
Cool. Well, should we turn off our BlackBerries and move on to the next thing?
Well, yeah, let's talk about what we're going to be talking about next week. Let me start with the year. We've been on a 2023 streak, and I do have a 2023 movie I want to see, but I couldn't see where it was streaming, so table that for now. So we're going to go back all the way to Year of Our Lord 1981.
Whoa.
Get your mind right. 1981. Clue number two. There were sequels to this movie in 1991 and 1992.
91 and 92.
The first one came out in 81, and then you got another sequel a decade later, and then another sequel a year later after the second one.
I have a guess, but is it the Leprechaun? Or are we going...
No, it's not Leprechaun. Oh, man, that'd be fun. I've only ever seen the first one, and I enjoyed it, but it's incredibly silly and stupid.
I actually almost, on St. Patrick's Day, I was like, it'd be kind of fun to watch Leprechaun.
I think isn't I saw like, the Jennifer Aniston one.
I was going to say, isn't Jennifer Aniston in one of them?
Yeah. In the first one, right?
Is that the first one? Wow. I watched that one.
I read the synopsis. I've seen it, but I was like a little kid. The synopsis is he goes back in time to find a bride, or he goes forward in time to find a bride, right? Isn't that the plot?
That's not the first one.
Oh. Okay.
In the first one, somebody catches him in Ireland and they trap him in a box. They put a four-leaf clover on it so he can't leave because of the arbitrary rules of Leprechaun, and he gets shipped to America and ends up at a family's house, and they remove the four-leaf clover and the Leprechaun gets out and starts killing people, and he's looking for his gold, and somebody finds it, and anyway.
Maybe that was the sequel, though. Isn't there one where he's like in the hood? Like Leprechaun
Yeah, that's the
in
third
the hood?
One, I think, Leprechaun okay. in the hood. Yep, yeah, maybe that's where he's trying to find a bride. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like it gets...
Why would you go to the hood to find a bride? That's...
Why not?
I don't know. He's shorts. I don't know. doesn't have a lot of options. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it worked for Eddie Murphy in...
Yeah.
Coming to America.
He went to the hood. All right, sorry.
No, you're fine. Tangent. You're fine. It's not well, no, here, I'm going to deal with a different one. Let me read what Mr. Roger Ebert, let me take a snippet of what he wrote here about this movie. Where are you at? Okay. This movie is so lockstep that we are basically reduced to watching the special effects, which are good but curiously abstract, because they don't much care about the people they're happening around. That's what Roger Ebert had to say about this movie. Didn't that help anything?
Is it Terminator?
Nope. You're close. That's like 84 and 91, although Terminator 3 is not until...
Right, Terminator 3 didn't come out right away, yeah.
Like another decade for that one.
Kevin, you have any guesses?
Oh, I feel so worthless right now.
Oh, I'm not giving. It'll get a little easier here. The movie was originally titled The Sensitives. That was the original title for this movie. Does that help? The Sensitives.
Were the sequels just made for TV or something?
The sequels were not well received, and I think, yes, very low budget. I'll give you that additional detail. Yes.
Here's The Sensitives.
Conan?
No, here's another one. So, Michael Ironside features in this movie very, very prominently. My guy, Michael Ironside. Somewhat inspired by seeing him in Blackberry. No.
Oh, Highlander?
No. No, that's interesting.
Isn't he in Highlander?
He might be. I don't know if he is. I don't think so.
The Clancy Brown guy and him are like the same person to me.
Let me give you another. It's also made by a Canadian film director. I'm just making a lot of brackets. Canadian film director, Canadian production.
David Cronenberg?
That's the director.
Scanners?
Oh, yeah, that's Scanners.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen this.
I know. Well, see, you picked Dead Ringers, I don't know how many months ago, which is the least favorite Cronenberg movie I've seen and frustrated me. But Scanners is on Max.
Yeah, I got a real blind spot with Cronenberg.
And I think Scanners is a better movie than Dead Ringers, and it'll be more fun to talk about tonight. Okay. It's another good Michael Ironside's performance here.
That's right. I used to watch this movie in late night. It must have been like USA Up All Night or something stupid like that back when I was a kid. It definitely catches your attention right away.
Oh, yeah.
From cool. So go into some genre, a little horror genre.
Yep. Well,
haven't done that for a while.
Yes, and I'll force you to watch a better Cronenberg movie than Dead Ringers.
Which Dead Ringers did you guys watch? The
original Cronenberg, the movie, the 86 or whenever it was movie with Jeremy Irons.
Is that what he played, like a gynecologist or something like that?
Twin gynecologists. Two brothers, and he plays both roles.
Yeah, okay.
I
vaguely remember that movie.
It's
not great.
Yeah, it's not very fun. It's just like not scary, not fun visual effects. Just kind of like, yeah. Okay, Jeremy Irons.
The Cronenberg movie I watched recently is Videodrome.
I wanted to do that one. I couldn't see where we're streaming, but Videodrome's my favorite. I love Videodrome.
That one's a wild one. So I'm excited to see Scanners. It's been a long time.
All right.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you later.
Bye-bye.
You goofs.